Hi, I'm Kate Hudson.
And my name is Oliver Hudson.
We wanted to do something that highlighted our relationship.
And what it's like to be siblings.
We are a sibling rivalry.
No, no.
Sibling rivalry.
Don't do that with your mouth.
Sibling rivalry.
That's good.
We had two of the four Agwumike sisters, WNBA sissies, Shanae and Erica. Shanae is a two-time WNBA All-Star of the LA Sparks, our home team, and is an NBA analyst for ESPN.
Erica also was recently drafted to the WNBA and was accepted to medical school.
So she has a decision to make.
One of the things that we talked about was women in sports, the importance of really highlighting and recognizing like how incredible these female athletes are. They don't really get their due, and it's time that they do. It really is.
We talked about that stuff with the girls, you know what I mean? How to promote the game, what needs to get done. Kobe was a big part of that, and you know, there's many reasons why it's devastating that he's gone, and this is definitely one of them. You know, I mean, he had his hooks into the WNBA and into women's ball, and was going to make it big. You know, you just sort of felt that
she had such a great story about, and I won't ruin it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's great,
and it does show how supportive Kobe was for the WNBA and basketball and anybody, mm-hmm. really. But I loved hearing about how they got into basketball, and they are Nigerian. We talked a lot about that.
Yeah.
Very traditional, you know, parents, first generation.
Actually, that's a perfect segue because we jumped right into talking about their parents. So
yeah,
when
we
you
did.
Hear it, when you finish hearing us talking, it's going to be literally boom. About their parents. Boom, about their parents. Here we go. You ready? 3, 2, 1. Now, but your parents were together in Nigeria and both came to the United States.
No, they came separate.
No.
Yeah.
So it's funny.
They met in the U.S.
So basically, yeah, Nigerians tend to send their kids to school in places where they know other Nigerians. And ironically, my dad's family, my mom's family, both sent themselves and their their siblings to Colorado and Utah. Like, so they knew people there, and then they linked up there because Nigerians, like, they're not many out there.
So
right?
They just lived.
So they met each other there, and then they both went to Weber State and then got married.
Wow. Where in Colorado?
Greeley.
Greeley. I know Greeley. Yeah.
I have no idea where Greeley
is. And then so where were you guys born?
Houston. Yeah, my
dad. Okay, so then they moved to Houston.
Yeah, he got a job after Weber State for Compaq, which is like...
Technically, he worked at iOmega first. I just learned this yesterday because I had to do something for it.
Yeah.
Worked at iOmega, then got a job at Compaq. That was in Houston. And then they all decided... They were supposed to go back and like run their respective family businesses back home in Nigeria. But my dad got a job. Next thing you know, they, you know, moved to Houston, pop out four girls and... Here we are.
Four girls.
Girl dad.
So who's the first?
Right, I was about to ask that.
So I'm number two and she's number four.
Yeah, so there's in between. There's one above us, Nneka, who's her teammate.
Yes.
And then there's one between us, Olivia, who was my teammate in high school.
And she's right now upstairs.
She's actually upstairs. She's getting her MBA from Rice University, so she's like doing a class right now. Mm. So yeah, so that's the order.
Wait, you guys were teammates in high school?
And
or
college.
Teammates? In college.
Yeah, she went
to... The last two were teammates in college, and Nneka and I were teammates in college and high school. Like, we go by twos.
We've all gone to, like, the twos all went to school together. So, like, they went to a high school called Cy Fair, and we went to a high school called Cy Woods, which was, like, across the street. And then they went to Stanford, and then Olivia and I went to Pepperdine, and then both transferred and went to Rice. So, yeah.
Oh, my God. Pepperdine.
Yeah, we went there for 1 year. We were Malibu girls for 1 year.
That's right. You were at Cross Creek?
Yeah. I had my good time. I didn't get to leave much because everything was too expensive around me. So I stayed on campus.
Did you like Pepperdine?
Yeah, it's a really good school, and of course it's like probably the prettiest school I've ever seen.
Oh my gosh, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's so crazy. Good. Yeah, I know. That's the first place I experienced where like kids were skipping class to go to the beach. I was like, this right. actually happens? I thought it was just in the movies, but they actually did it. But it was good. I think it was just like a shock because I was coming from Texas. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it was a really cool experience, and I mean, I loved it. We transferred back like for one because I became pre-med, and it was like it took me 45 minutes to shadow a doctor at UCLA. Like they didn't really have as much pre-med stuff in Malibu compared mm-hmm. to like in Texas. I have the whole what's it called? Texas Medical Center. Yeah. It's like right there. So,
but were you playing ball at Pepperdine?
Yeah, I played basketball there, and I play at Rice. Yeah.
Okay, so did you get a scholarship to Pepperdine?
Yeah, all four of us.
Yeah, we all been
all four of us.
Yeah,
right. And then you got a scholarship to go to Stanford.
Correct.
I mean, your guys' family. I want to talk to all of you because it's like to be like for all four girls to be exceptional at the same sport is pretty incredible. I mean, we definitely don't have that in our family.
Well, in your industry,
interesting because we're all athletic, right? But to be exceptional.
Well, we're exceptional in the entertainment industry.
Exactly.
We tried
entertainment. I took intro to acting at Pepperdine, and that was like the hardest thing I ever did.
I made a music video when I was in college, and now I highly regret it. Like, I'm so embarrassed by it.
Do you still have that music video?
It's on YouTube. I can show y'all if you want. It's on YouTube.
I'm definitely going to look that up.
Oh, man.
How did basketball come into the equation for your family?
So for us, obviously we're Nigerian American, born and raised in Houston, Texas, but you know, our blood is 100% Nigerian. So even though we're, you know, going to school and living life as Americans at home, we're like under the Nigerian fabric, as you know, and you've come to understand. So basketball like has never been a thing that I guess, you know, a couple years ago, you can say a couple decades ago, Nigerian parents said, oh, you should put your girls into basketball. So growing up, academics is 100% stressed. So we were four girls and like, you know, we're growing up. We were good at school, but like, I think my parents realized we're crazy in the house. I will never forget, like, we had a staircase and NECA, our oldest, our fearless one, like got those big map books and we're like sliding down the staircase. And I remember we busted a hole in the wall. We used to play kickball and like busted one of our, you know, windows. I think our parents were like, okay, these are great girls. They do well in school, but we need to put them into some kind of like constructive activity. So them not knowing much about sports, right outside our neighborhood was a gymnastics like gym. So they put us into gymnastics. That was quickly like a, because we're
it lasted like a year too.
It lasted a year.
Yeah.
I always tell people like, I knew I wasn't destined for gymnastics. She probably is because she's the shortest out of all of us. And you kind of built like a gymnast, low key.
I'm not that short though, but I'm short compared to them.
Compared to them.
I hear this every day.
So you're 5'9". Yeah. That is not
Thank
short.
You. Thank
I know. That is true.
Thank
but for a house, it's a little, like we're here quarantined and she's like, I'm getting mad at her for not putting the dishes up. And she's like, well, I can't reach.
I can't reach them. Like.
Shorty.
But long story short, we were in gymnastics. I always tell people I knew I wasn't destined for gymnastics because like on the uneven bars, I would never make it over because my butt would hit the ground because my legs were so strong and I never had like the traction.
Yeah.
So my mom's coworker came and saw that we were in gymnastics. She was like, mm-mm. Why are you in gymnastics? Why did you put your girls in gymnastics? You should put them into basketball. So we started off like I was 9, NECA was 10. Doing basketball. I was like, that first practice was tragic. I think you guys were playing in the hall.
We just kind of went to their practices, but they wore jean shorts to their practice.
See, that's where we were like so out of touch. Our parents were, right? Like jean shorts, halter top.
Like
we had glasses holder. Like all those
bad.
Girls, it was horrible. All those girls were wearing like the cool Adidas and Nikes. We came in like Keds. And you know, back then, Keds, like, that was like
your toe just
kindergarten
through them, yeah.
Kindergarten shoes or like nurses were wearing them. Like that was like the vibe. So we went in there, we embarrassed ourselves. I was so embarrassed that I went to the bathroom and stayed there the whole time until practice was over. NECA.
Really? Just because of the way you were dressed, pretty much?
All of the above.
All everything.
All of the above. Like NECA's first shot didn't just go over the backboard. It went over like the scoreboard, which is sitting on the backboard. That was how tragic it was. So I'm the type of person, like, I only do things I know I can be good at. Like, that's why I don't bowl. That's why I don't pool. All that type of stuff.
Oh my God, I'm terrible at bowling. And it makes me so mad. It makes me sick.
Yes.
It's so frustrating.
I'm horrible too.
Bowling's like, hard.
It is. But so basically I went and hid in the bathroom. And that first year I didn't play. NECA played by herself. And so she went through it. Like, she was the worst. She was the one they're like, catch the ball. But slowly and surely she got better and better. I don't even know if she remembers this, but like the way we motivated NECA to be good at basketball, my dad would say, okay, for every rebound, we're going to give you $1. Mm-hmm. And so we'd be like, yeah, NECA, go get like $10. We can go to the vending machine, get candy. And so she started doing that, but we never really cared about the money. It just became like a motivation type of thing.
Yep.
And then at home, she like would come and show us on the driveway, like, this is how you do a crossover. This is how you do a layup. So we all started learning the game watching NECA. NECA was the guinea pig. And then we all started joining. And then we grew. And then the rest was kind of
history. Did you start? So what year was this?
Ooh, 10. So I was 10. This was 2002.
Were you into basketball at the time?
Mm-mm.
Like watching the sport?
No. I didn't even know of any. We didn't. That was our first experience.
We didn't watch sports.
No.
We watched like Saved by the Bell. So,
we were watching Saved by the Bell.
We didn't care to watch sports.
So, but you guys obviously had some sort of a natural ability for it, and it just had to be brought out, I guess, right?
I think, honestly, I mean, being straight up about it, like.
Yeah.
I guess our African nature sort of helps, like athleticism, but then also like the mindset of determination. So like our parents are like, you're going to go in there and you're not going to fail. You're going to play this game the right way. And then obviously like we're tall and, well, I say we, but you know.
You see, this is going to happen like at least five. This is going to happen like 5 to 10 times.
But I would say this, but like she may be the shortest one of the bunch, but she's the most skilled out of all of us. Like we never thought she would, well, really make it to the WNBA, and then
they didn't know I was gonna get drafted until I literally got drafted. Like their expectations were high, but extremely low at the same time.
That's amazing.
Yeah, right.
But was there a moment though when you fell in love with the game? You know what I mean? Because it seemed to be forced upon you, or at least this is what you need to do for an outlet. Was there the moment where you're like, oh, this is it. I love this game.
You can answer.
I actually never knew this answer for you. So,
I mean, for me, I just watched them play. Like my sister Olivia and I were cheerleaders, like for the most of the time watching them. Like, you know, those kids that would literally go and find the other kids in the gym and pretend to be cheerleaders. That's what we did for the main part of when they played. But then we started playing, and I think we just really liked like the teamwork aspect of it. Probably going into high school, and then when they were already in college, I just learned how much you can use sports as your platform for other things. I was like, whoa, so they played this sport and got to Stanford? What? Like, I was like, this is crazy. So I think I learned to love the, not just the benefits of it, but also like everything that went into the process of it, which was like working on a team, communicating with other people. So it was probably high school when I really like tried to really get into basketball.
And it was probably high school for me as well, because high school is when NECA and I won our first state championship. And I think like so much went into winning it. Like we were like, this is it. Like that was the end. You know how in high school, like everything's the end of the world.
Yeah.
So like we went, my freshman year we went and we lost. And it was like heartbreaking, as every heartbreak in high school is.
Yeah, they were hurt.
And we were butt hurt.
We didn't get it. Olivia and I were just like, can we go to McDonald's? And they were like crying.
Like we're like, shut up. Yeah. But then the next year we won it. And so I think from then we were like, whoa, like this whole highest level of playing was really cool. And then also, like, you know, as she mentioned, our parents didn't really know. We didn't really know that like basketball could get us, you know, these top schools.
Yeah.
Like it was just funny because my parents would sit there and be like, what? Like you want to offer my daughter a scholarship to Baylor? Like, oh, this is great.
They didn't believe it.
They didn't believe it until literally the coach knocked on the door and like presented it. And they're like, whoa, this is different. So that's when I think our mindset changed.
Wow.
What did you win in high school? How far did you guys go? Did you win?
State.
I won twice.
I won state once. So
NECA won once.
That's the most you can do in Texas. Like in public schools, we don't play like nationally and stuff. So you pretty much just were the best team in the state.
And what about when you started to sort of find your groove and start to love the game? Did you start watching basketball? Were you a Rockets fan?
You know what's funny? I don't think she remembers it. She may not even be alive, but our first sporting event, yeah, you probably weren't. Our first sporting event was ironically the Houston Comets, the WNBA team, Comets. Like the dynasty. And so I was cleaning out my room before we moved to our current family home. And I like opened one of those like random things. Like I had like a rock there from the beach and like some other random stuff.
It was random.
It was super random. And I'm sure she still remembers in her head what that rock looks like.
Yeah.
And then there was a ticket and I looked at the ticket and I asked my parents, I was like, this is a Comets ticket? And they're like, yeah, we used to, like, my company, Compaq, used to give us tickets to the games. And then I remembered being in the arena, and I was like, oh, I think it's kind of crazy cool how my first sports memory was a Comets game. Mm-hmm. Growing up in Houston, Texas, not knowing that basketball would, like, take over our lives as girls growing up, you know, in the South as well. So I guess that's the first time I sort of was like,
We don't really, we didn't really watch sports that much growing up. Our dad really is into soccer, so we kind of watched soccer with him. And we liked that. And then we watched the Olympics whenever that came on. But I think, of course, as we got older, we started to watch sports. The probably the earliest I remember is like watching Tracy McGrady and the Rockets. Like that's probably and that's not even that long ago, but that's the earliest.
That was T-Mac.
T-Mac, McGrady, yeah, because I remember, like, anytime he scored.
Oh, T-Mac gets a Big Mac.
We get a free Big Mac, so I used to scream. I used to be so happy.
Yeah, if the Rockets scored over 100 points, we would get Big Macs.
Yeah, so I was so happy.
Yeah, see, I'm a Lakers fan and Lakers and or the Sparks. And so, yeah, it's like if they score 100 points, you get tacos.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So it's all about the tacos.
Okay, tell me how you feel about the Lakers, this squad. You must be happy.
Oh.
I'm very, very, very happy. I mean, it's a little upsetting just because of the season had to sort of get cut short. Looks like we're going to start playing basketball again. But, I mean, it's a special team for sure. AD is the man. I mean,
game changer.
That I think he's almost an underrated player in a way. That guy's going to be, I mean, he there's nothing he can't do, you know?
Agreed.
Crazy.
Agreed.
I just love the Lakers squad right now. It's back to showtime a little bit. It's so fun. It's just, these guys are having the time of their lives, it feels like, you know?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, now you speak in my language, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, you see the ESPN analyst come out in her?
I know.
It's so funny because, like, I can't, like, root for teams because, like, once you're a broadcaster, you're like, oh, you're biased. But I'm like, well, technically I'm an LA athlete, so I can co-sign on you. But then the minute I say something positive about the Clippers, all of LA comes at you. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I like to try to stay because – I was always a huge football fan, and then basketball to me was always about my Baron. He was like my best friend growing up, Baron Davis. We went to high school together, and so anywhere he played, I just supported him.
Mm-hmm.
And
have a problem. There's a problem in the Hudson household.
Ooh.
Because my nephew's wearing all Clippers gear. Everything is Clippers, Clippers, Clippers. And I've been a Lakers fan since forever.
Forever.
And it's not a cool thing.
Right now, I
just love sports. I mean, we were sitting watching The Last Dance.
Ooh.
And I was just like, oh my God, like, is this the best sport ever? I mean, we talk about showtime when you're saying that, you know, watching the Bulls in their heyday and watching them talk about this time and like that special time in basketball was like rock and roll meets basketball.
Facts.
It was just so incredible.
Do you have a story like meeting Michael Jordan?
I also love Michael Jordan. Yes.
Okay.
I also literally am in love with him and I love you, but I love him more.
Have you guys met MJ?
I don't think I've met him.
I'm just kidding. I don't.
But I work with Scottie Pippen, and it's funny. Like I've known him post playing, and so now to watch it, I'm like, oh, okay. Like swag on a whole different level now. Like I've always known, but now you see sort of what he like overcame. So it's been kind of cool, and I love seeing like the old heads, like the OGs, sort of still have like beefs. You know
I learned so much throughout that documentary. I didn't know a single player's name. Like, I could recognize faces, but I did not know those NBA legends' names just because I just didn't do my research. But then I started learning, like, Scottie Pippen. I'm pretty sure he was at Pepperdine and, like, was shooting or with something once. And I was like, I've seen that face.
Look, this is what I have to deal with. Half the time, I take her around to these basketball arenas, and then she's just, like, on her phone, and like, her friends are like, yo, tell her about
that. Yeah, so I posted a picture on her birthday this past year, and we were at some ESPN event, And I was like, happy birthday, Chinee, blah, blah. And they're like, yo, is that Jerry West in the background? And I was like, who? And they're like, Jerry West. And I had to, oh my God, had to Google it. And I was like, oh, that is Jerry West in the background. And I tweeted the person back. I was like, yeah, that is. And they're like, whoa. And I was like, Chinee. And I told her. And she was like, what is wrong
this
with
is what
you?
I have to deal with.
Literally the symbol of the NBA.
Yeah, the logo of the NBA.
It's the logo.
I was so shocked.
This is what we have to deal with.
Yeah.
That's really,
really
funny.
I think it's actually really amazing that your love for basketball came from literally playing the sport and not from watching the sport. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
that's a real pure way of loving something.
Well, let's go back a little bit. Let's go back to your childhood, you know, growing up. What was that like? What was, you know, was there a lot of discipline? Were you girls all super tight, you know?
Go for it.
Academic discipline.
Yeah, yeah. There was discipline, but at the same time, I don't think there was that much discipline. It was almost like...
For her, she's the youngest.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Honestly, like, NECA, our oldest sister, pretty much raised me. Like, by then, my parents had her on lock, so, like, she raised me pretty much. But it was like, my mom definitely emphasized school. She was like, you know, do well in school and things of that nature. But I think we kind of just knew her aura and we just went with it afterwards. She didn't really have to keep telling us every single time, like, you should be studying, all things like that. But it was fun. I mean, anything that Olivia and I did, NECA and Chinee already did. So we always had, like, resources when it came to school. You know, like, I like Chinee's handwriting better than mine. So she would write her my, like, biology on my binder for me and stuff like that. So, like, I don't know. It was fun growing up with them. We definitely, like, didn't have to have babysitters as much or ways of entertainment because there was always four of us.
Yeah, our experiences are probably different just between, like, the divide. So NECA is 2 years older than me. I'm currently 28. And then there's 4 years between me and our younger sister, Chisom, Olivia. Wait, first, actually, let me give you the names, okay?
Oh, so, yeah, Erica's okay. My middle.
Wait, hold on. Let's go from bottom up. I always love doing this. Okay, yeah. Your name is?
Erinma Erica Ogwumike.
But you don't have to, just do the first. Your name is?
Erinma.
Then Chisom.
Yeah, she's.
Then I'm Chinenye.
Her full name, yeah.
Then Nemkadi.
Yeah. It's gonna be, yeah. Ifeanwa
is our mom.
Yeah.
And then our dad's like,
What is mom?
Ifeanwa.
Yeah.
Ifeanwa.
But they call her Ife.
And then our dad's name is Peter.
Peter.
Was he born with Peter, though?
What? Yes. Technically, it's like his middle name, though. Here it goes.
Long.
Chukwemeka.
Yes.
But his first... So Peter, Ifeanwa, Nemkadi, Chinenye, Chisom, and Erinma.
Yeah.
Well, were your grandparents, like, religious? Is Peter from the Bible?
Yes. Our dad's a junior, too, so yeah.
Peter, so yeah, we're from southeastern part of Nigeria. We're Igbo, so, like, Nigeria's Igbo, Hausa, Yoruba, typically the main ethnic groups. We're Igbo. And, yeah, my dad, his father's name was Peter Ogwumike, and then my dad is the firstborn son, Peter Ogwumike Jr. So he's sort of, like, now the heir, the patriarch of our current modern family.
If we had a brother, it'd probably be Peter.
Yeah, for sure.
Probably Peter the Third.
Peter the Third, for sure.
So growing up, though, how much tradition was, Nigerian tradition was brought into your house?
I mean, we were in a Nigerian home. So, we ate Nigerian food all the time. On weekends, we're going to see other of our aunties and uncles, which even though they're family friends, it's like everybody's your aunt, your uncle.
I thought I was related to so many people growing up.
But, that was, our culture is, like, a huge part of us. Like, we still go back. I go back at least every year. They go back every other year.
I've been gone since high school because of college and stuff, but I'll be going back now.
Yeah. But, like, yeah, mm-hmm. we grew up with a huge appreciation for our culture and our mm-hmm. heritage. And we sort of now are trying to teach people a little bit about it. And I think, like, now, especially in Hollywood, you're starting to see, as you mentioned, like, more Nigerians out there. And you can, mm-hmm. I always say, like, if you know one, you can sort of spot them all, right?
And did you grow up in, was it a Nigerian neighborhood or was it, no?
Burbs.
Burbs.
We were in, like, borderline country.
Not country, but like...
Tomball, Texas.
But we were born in Tomball, Texas, yeah. But mm-hmm. we grew up in Spring, Texas. This is all, like, suburbs of Houston.
Yeah.
But now mm-hmm. we went to high schools and, like, later middle school and high school in Cypress, Texas. So we're always in Houston.
Always the suburbs of Houston, yeah.
But yeah, like, she's the one who probably talks with the most Texan accent out of all of us.
I heard that.
You know you did it. No way.
I swear to God, I did. I was like, ah, I hear a little.
Mama.
Yeah.
No, they always say that, but I don't think so. But when I went to Pepperdine, they were like, oh my God. I was like, what? I was like, y'all sound weird.
You just said y'all, so there you go.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's funny because you're in the middle of like this huge megaplex. I think like the fourth largest city in the U.S.
Super diverse, super metropolitan. But like the minute you get out, like past 15 minutes, like it's just country. Like,
I didn't realize
where am I?
I didn't realize until I came back home from Stanford, like left home for the first time. I was like, we're going to our neighborhood. It's like, oh, there's like a ranch right next to our neighborhood. Like cows are on, like we just went jogging the other day and we saw cows on the loose.
So no,
like,
yeah.
How cute.
During quarantine, we work out at this park and there's literally cows every day and cows and goats. And I think it's so normal, but
we're like, oh, that's cute. And everyone's like, what?
Yeah, that's not normal.
And you don't think of Houston like that.
Did all you girls get along growing up, or was there tensions? Was there fighting?
Yeah, we got along.
We got along for the most part.
Wait, why are you laughing?
I know.
I was a little menace growing up.
Oh my God.
We got along, but I was just the youngest, so it was like always something that bothered me. Mm-hmm. So Neko would pick out our clothes every single day for school. And she would literally go on Word and make a thing. And it would be like, do you want to wear a dress or a skirt? And we would have to circle it. And then we'd push it under her door. And
yeah, so when I can't believe this actually happened, actually.
Yeah, so we would circle what we wanted. And then we'd slide it under her door. And then in the morning, she woke up like 20 minutes before us. So she would pick our clothes out. I don't think I ever liked an outfit she picked out. I always, every single one, I was
wait,
like,
but how
what
cute
is
that? That's the cutest thing ever. That she actually, like... helped you.
Yeah, and I took it for
organize. And you're like, this is terrible.
Yeah, everything I'd be like, I don't want to wear this. She'd be trying to get me to match, and I didn't want to match.
She was just difficult for no reason. Yeah. Like, but you know, that's how the youngest are. They like gotta fend for themselves and stuff.
Mm-hmm. But we all got along.
Oh yeah. I know, that's so true. Because I have two boys and a little girl, and my little girl, she's super feminine. But she's tough as shit. Like, she wants to wrestle and she wants to get in there. I mean, she has to sort of fight for her spot.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. Yeah. We didn't fight physically, though, because of all girls, I guess. But we definitely fought with words.
Oh, yeah.
Words can hurt more than for real.
I want to know what that's like. I mean, you know, as a girl with all brothers, I never had that experience. I didn't know, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It would be so nice. It feels like it would be such a nice relief to, like, fight with words and to actually, like, because girls listen to what we say to each other, you know what I mean?
Yes.
Like, you'll pick up on every word.
You know, that's so funny because I feel like I wish we could just actually fight and then, like, be done with it.
Because, like, a lot of boys will just fight and then you see them go play video games, like, 2 seconds later, like, they're good because they hashed it out. Like, us is, like, you're holding a grudge and then...
Yeah, grudge Olympics.
And then you need to, like, you need something for them, so you're like, hey, can you give me blah, blah? And so it's just awkward.
And, like, the way things were quelled in our household, which is actually funny... Our mom made us, like, all decide on the same, like, show to watch. So, like, everyone had a say. So, like, we'd be fighting, and then we'd all be sitting there, like, so what do you want to watch on TV? Okay, let's watch this movie.
Oh, God. That one of the worst times in parenting for me is when it's family movie night.
Oh.
Okay? And then it's like, all right, what are we watching? It starts off super exciting. We got popcorn. And then it devolves into just hell. Because no one can decide on the movie. Everyone's yelling, I don't want this. Da, da. Yeah.
And then
finally...
person leaves and isn't watching the
that's
movie
it,
like
right,
20
exactly,
minutes
Kate.
In.
And
right.
finally I'm like, fuck this. I'm done with it. No, there is no movie night. We're done. We're done.
Oh my gosh.
was your dad, did they want a boy? There's four of you girls. Were they trying for a boy?
So I think they probably were trying for a boy. But one thing that we love about our dad is, like, coming from Africa, where, you know, in Africa, it's an extremely patriarchal culture and society, right? Like, a lot of times boys are the status of, like, family through generations. You need a boy because he carries on the name. Like, that means a lot. Well, my dad had four girls. And so, like, he's often, and he's the first son. He's, like, the heir, like I said, the patriarch of our family. And a lot of people would go to him in the Nigerian culture and just say, hey, like, don't you need a son? Like, you have four girls. And he said, my four girls are better than all your sons.
Yeah, he didn't.
Like, he never really cared. And I think, like, you know, we talk about girl dads now. He was really a girl dad because, like, from the beginning, it's not easy to, like, hear your peers say, oh, why are your girls wearing jerseys? Like, why are they, like, you know, not cooking and cleaning in the kitchen? Why aren't they speaking Igbo, our natural language? Our parents knew we were taking care of school and that we were doing things to help each other and also play sports. They saw that. He saw that. And for him to, like, make the conscious decision to, like, constantly uplift us in the midst of, like, those preconceived ideas about, like, what girls are back home, I think he just sort of wanted, like, he used this as, like, haha, like, I'm gonna go get society, like, and so I think that's where we get all of our confidence from, honestly. Like, our mom is a badass woman, like, she plays no games, but our dad is the one who sort of taught us, like, look, no one can stand in your way. You know, we're Black women, we're in industries, like, I'm in sports. In the WNBA, they constantly compare us to the men. You know, she's playing basketball as well, where they, like, always make these comparisons. So, like, we didn't realize until, like, we entered the real world, like, graduating college, like, oh, so this is how we have to deal with, like, the entire broad spectrum of things. Like, our dad didn't give us boundaries. So I think we're super grateful that, like, we're starting to realize, wow, like, we are really the lucky ones. Like, most people don't have that experience.
I think low-key, though, they were hoping I was a boy.
Oh, no, for sure. For sure.
Yeah.
I think there was a moment where they're like, the doctor says, oh, it's another girl. And your dad's like, girl, damn it. Okay, no,
okay, okay.
It's fine, it's fine.
It's okay, it's okay. Yeah.
Do you guys stay connected to Nigerian culture? I mean, is that still a big part of your life?
Huge part. Yeah.
I think even more so now growing up, I'm appreciating it even more because it's kind of now they started it growing up, but it's now my obligation to still, like, try to learn more and stay in touch. So, like, I've personally, like, been listening to more Nigerian music, like, and all Afro beats are popular, like, throughout the U.S. now, too. So it's not even hard to, like, find Nigerian artists.
And it's funny because, like, in our culture, if you think about occupations, like, the joke is, like, you must be a doctor or a lawyer, and that is it.
Or engineer.
Or engineer. You're right. Yeah. Or engineer. And that is it. But now, like, there's so many great creatives out there. One of our friends is Yvonne Orji, who just came out with a really cool HBO special in comedy. Like, there are a lot of athletes. Like, there's Anthony Joshua that's doing great stuff in boxing. We're obviously in basketball. Like, there are, you're starting to see a few, like, notable people of, like, Nigerian heritage that are doing the other. But to get there, we've had to be like, all right, get your degree. Like, you got to go to college.
Yeah.
And then you work on your, like, side hustle until that side hustle could be your main hustle. But, like, I do get hit by a lot of people. Like, even I think some of her friends that are Nigerian, like, hey, my parents don't understand.
Yeah,
like,
they ask us
and all
it's
a real struggle.
Yeah, and I think that's what I was like, wow, our parents are really, like, understanding. Like, what? You know, so I felt really fortunate. And people even joke about me because I'm going to med school too and stuff. They're like, oh, typical Nigerian. And I'm just like, really? And I'm like, I swear my parents did not make me do it. Like, I actually want to do it. And they're like, yeah, sure, they probably made you. But no, like, when I told my parents I wanted to be pre-med, they were like, are you sure? They didn't want me to do it because they were like, this looks hard.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I was like, yeah, I'll do it. So I think our parents were ahead of the game.
Well, it's like what you're saying, like, the night, like, okay, being a patriarchal sort of culture, right, as you were saying, what does feminism look like in that culture?
Oh, man, it looks like, honestly, just us defying expectations, right? Like, so one of the coolest things I've done, I sort of fell into, like, broadcasting, currently work for ESPN. I'm an NBA analyst, so I, like, report primarily on the NBA, but I talk, like, some, like, all sports sort of generally. And one of the coolest things, the way I got my foot in the door at ESPN was they had something called SportsCenter Africa. And they have, like, SportsCenter Philippines, SportsCenter Australia, and all these cool things. And they did one for Africa, for the millions of viewers throughout Africa. I was able to be a co-host and anchor on that show. And to me, like, I've been in the WNBA, like, All-Star is fun, and, like, I've gone to NBA games and work on that. But, like, that role was so special because knowing, like, the full circle nature of my career, meaning, like, My parents, like, we could have gone back. We could have been born in Nigeria. You know, I could be in a culture, we could be in a culture where, like, if you say a girl wants to play basketball in Nigeria, they'd be like, what is she doing? Like, the infrastructure is not there for girls to find success like it is here in America for opportunity. So when I was doing that job, I was like, this is it. Like, this is really cool. Literally all the millions of sports fans that are pretty much men, they're going to get their sports news from a black female Nigerian American athlete. And now hopefully they'll look at their daughters and they'll look at girls differently and say, well, if she's talking sports, maybe she can do that too. So like all those things, I think, help us. I always tell people, like, our existence is the resistance, meaning, like, I know right now we're in, like, a really difficult point in society, but even just making it to where we are now and doing what we do at a high level, that to me is, like, pushing boundaries. Like, for her, like, it was not easy to watch her, like, go through all, I mean, all those classes and courses. Like, I was an international relations major. I could sort of have fun with that, you know?
Yeah.
She was in the gutter, like, chemistry, O-chem, like, all the stuff she's doing. Yeah. You get me.
Hey, I feel like it's PTSD. You took those?
I know.
Oh, I got expelled from high school for cheating on a chemistry test. So the word chemistry is a trigger. For me.
And he's not kidding. He literally got expelled from high school.
I'm trying to think of the worst thing that happened to me in high school. The worst thing that happened to me in high school was, like, there was a food fight, and because it was happening, you know how, like, things happen? You jump and be like, whoa! Me and my sister were the first ones to jump and be like, whoa! And so the cameras were like, they must have thrown the first one! So, like, we had to go, I don't know if you even know this.
No.
We had to, like, clean up the cafeteria, but then we, like, you know, appealed, and they realized it wasn't us.
Yeah. You appealed. We were nerds. Our mom was our principal in middle school, so we just were nerdy.
Wait, yeah, your mom was your principal?
In middle school.
She was my assistant principal.
No.
And my principal.
And then her principal.
Yeah.
So really quick.
That's
what
a whole
parents,
other podcast.
So what do your parents do?
Yes.
Your father works for...
So he has his own company. So he's been in technology. He's an engineer. But then he started creating his own company that basically takes, the way I describe it is paper run businesses, which are more prevalent in Africa, and he brings them digital. So he has his own company. So, like, during our adolescence, pretty much like when we started playing basketball, he was on the go 24/7 going running his company. But then he'd come home for, like, holidays and major games and every, like, school function.
Yeah.
So, like, he was always on the go, but he was always there. Our mom,
so he's a manufacturing engineer.
Yeah.
Long story short.
There you go. Okay. Our mom, she had plans to go to law school, but when my dad and her moved to Houston, she started off as a special ed teacher. Then she became a teacher. And then at that school, by the time I was in middle school, she was assistant principal, the head of discipline of the school. By the time by the time our little sisters were there,
she was
a principal, and now she's the assistant superintendent of our school district,
Psych-RSD.
And then she just got her PhD in education this past December.
She's the epitome of stars from the bottom.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. But your mother being the principal or the vice principal or the head of disciplinarian, what was that like going to the school where your mother's the one who could kick your ass?
It was harder for me than it was for her.
Like, what?
You guys were lit. Like, so for me and my older sister, I will never forget. I had a huge test. I was in the seventh grade. It's a two-story school, Hamilton Middle School. And I remember I didn't study. My mom knew I was like, it was a big one. And I knew I did bad when I walked out to lunch because she knows where I sit at lunch. And she was pacing by where I sit in the empty cafeteria. And I looked down. I was like, oh, she's about to tear in to me.
So the teacher told her the grade before.
The teacher told her the grade before. She told me before I even knew about it. Because I think she was like, send Janae to tutoring or something like that. But they sort of had fun with her.
Yeah, when she was the principal for us, like, she wasn't as much. She still did some discipline things, but it was fine. Like
they'd have food.
Yeah,
and
the, like, custodians would, like, give us food, the cafeteria people.
So, but you never got in trouble to where you had to go to your mother?
No.
That was incentive enough to not.
No way.
Yeah. instead of go to the principal's office, it's like, go to your mother's room.
No.
But I like that idea that, like, it was her being a principal was incentivized enough for you guys to, like, incentive enough for you to be on your best behavior.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, we are not going to mom's office. Yeah.
Of course, because like most kids where the discipline ends after you leave her office,
but
it does
Ollie,
not end because you got to go home.
Ollie, Oliver, imagine if our mom was a principal of any school.
Sign me up for that school.
The school would just explode.
Sign me up for that school.
I was like, I would like be a mom's. We'd be at mom's office all the time. I'm trying to think of like.
Oh my god, my mom would just call us up there because she missed us.
She'd make the announcement.
I know.
Totally.
Yeah. Oh my god, it's so funny.
Wow.
So did you play basketball throughout all of like middle school, like grade school, middle school, high school?
Yes, we.
Basketball and volleyball.
Oh yeah, basketball and volleyball. You're right. Mm. And we liked volleyball, but it's hard to do both. But we once NECA started playing, all of us got in formation.
It was mainly middle school, high school. Elementary was like,
Go.
I was just gonna say, like, my favorite highlight from elementary when it came to like our athletic activity, this is like speaking to Texas, in order to pass to go to middle school, so like go from fifth grade, fifth to sixth. Was it fifth grade or second grade? I can't remember.
I don't know what the story you're about.
Either way, you had to do the Texas two-step. So like line dancing, you had to pass that in order to graduate.
Oh yeah, we did.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Really?
We had rodeo day.
Oh, it was
day.
A square dancing. It was
we
called
had
square
dancing day.
And it was a test.
Yeah.
That's
oh my god.
Very Texan.
Very Texan.
Extremely.
I feel like I would really thrive in a school like that.
Where you have to dance to pass.
If dancing to pass was like something I had, I would have been a way better student.
Cause box, because you've got cause to have a box.
Oh, that's good. That was good, Ollie. I mean, a little bit more interesting melody would have made it better, but...
Cause box, because we all box for a cause.
Oh, that's good. It's same bad melody, but... better wording. So CauseBox is a quarterly, four times a year subscription box. It's curated by women for women, and it's filled with all sorts of amazing products and brands that are ethical, sustainable, and have a positive mission to give back and make the world better. I love
this.
That's
exactly why we love CauseBox.
CauseBox gives you for $50... $250 plus worth of products.
Hold on. Let me do some math. All right. That's good. It's a good deal. My wife is obsessed with CauseBox. She has CauseBoxed many, many of her friends. Tell me what's in the box. Tell me what's in this CauseBox.
Every quarter you get new things. But an example of a box is like there's one that has, you know, a bento box, duffel bag, jade roller. It also comes with a magazine that's exclusive to the box that tells the story and the mission behind every product. So they really inform you about everything that's going on. And yeah.
The best part, of course, is that we got our listeners an exclusive discount. So go to www.causebox.com/sibling and use the code sibling to get your first box for 30% off, as in you can get your first box worth of $250+ for less than $39 and free shipping. So go check out CauseBox right now. I can tell you firsthand, secondhand, thirdhand, even 17th hand that you're going to love it.
Sakara.
S-A-K-R-A. S-A-K-R-A. Sakara. 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 That's how I feel about Sakara. You know, I've been eating so much Sakara, it's giving me that amount of energy that I can come up with cheers on the spot.
Sakara is actually one of my favorite food delivery systems. If you want to change your diet, it's great. If you don't want to change your diet, if you know what you like and you still just want to eat healthy and have it be simple, it's also great. So they've been very clever about how they formulate it. It's not about restricting for them. It's about what you're eating. So it's all very nourishing foods.
But along with the food and the meals, it also has its daily wellness essentials, supplements, herbal teas, to support your nutrition. Though they have the metabolism super powder. Yes, that's the good shit.
So it really focuses on your overall wellness, starting with what you eat.
And right now, right this second, right this second, Sakara is offering our listeners 20% off their first order when they go to sakara.com/sibling or enter code sibling at checkout. That's Sakara, sakara.com/sibling to get 20% off your first order. Sakara.com/sibling. So let's go through drafting for a second. Like NECA, she was the first and she was drafted by... Which team? Did she go number one overall?
Yeah. So they both went number one overall.
Yeah, you both went number one overall.
Amazing. To the Sparks. She went. NECA went to the Sparks. Chennai went 2 years later to the Connecticut
Sun. Yeah, 2012, NECA was drafted number one to the Sparks. 2014, okay. I was drafted to the Connecticut Sun, yeah.
You are. That's fucking crazy, man.
Amazing.
That's insane. So what was it like seeing your older sister get drafted number one? Where were you at? Like, how did that all play out?
It was nuts.
That's huge.
That whole senior year. So we were at Stanford together. We were having fun. And she had a tremendous senior year. So I'm like, you know how like you have different personalities as siblings? She's the one that like is just going and coasting. Like she's killing it. She's like naturally a boss, right? Mm-hmm. She's already been WNBA MVP. She's been a WNBA champion. She's the WNBA, our Players Association president. So like, as cool as we are, we're just the troublemakers probably, right? Yeah.
She's the legit one.
She's legit. So it's just funny because her senior year in college, so her senior year, my sophomore year, I'm the one, the sister that's always like reading the blogs, right? Like ready to defend the sisters, right?
She's and trolling.
Yeah. So I was reading this blog and I was like, yo, this is crazy. Like NECA, they're saying that like you about to get drafted into the WNBA. Like, again, remember when we played basketball, we just are playing and having fun and like finding success. We didn't know that there was an after or a next. And so NECA's like, I think I want to go to medical school. I don't know if I want to like, you know, do anything else. I was like, no, NECA, you're not reading this. They're saying you're getting picked number one overall. Yeah. So we literally are going into the March Madness tournament, her final tournament, the final games of our career. And she's like, I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm like, no, NECA, you're getting drafted into WNBA. And eventually she sort of started to understand the hype. A lot of people, like, growing up, like, that's their dream. Imagine, like, senior year in college. She's like, this is kind of cool.
Wow.
So
wow.
It was cool to witness that just because, like, we didn't know that that was an expectation that could happen. Mm-hmm. And then we're like, whoa. So I remember.
Well, then how is it different for you then? You know what I mean? Like,
wait, where were you when you found out that NECA got...
Okay, so I was there. Drafted? So the draft happened in Connecticut at the ESPN headquarters. So you guys weren't, right? It was myself, my mom.
I can't even remember.
Isn't like, that crazy? We just
can't remember it. Like, we didn't understand the importance of all this.
It was just happening.
No one sat us down and explained what was happening.
Exactly. So I was there with my parents, because Nick and I, two peas in a pod, you know, older too. And I remember watching that. I was like, yo, this is dope. And so 2 years, so it was amazing to see that happen. But that sort of like planted the seed in my head. So then I had my junior and senior year. When she was playing in the WNBA, I was like, oh, I want that experience too. I want to be number one. And so the irony, the coolest part about it was the draft was still in Connecticut, but this time for me in 2014, it was at Mohegan Sun Casino. I don't know if you guys have been to that casino.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I know where it is. I've never been to it.
There's a lot of concerts. Yeah. So it was at that casino, which is the home site of the Connecticut Sun, who had the number one pick. So I was literally sitting there, NECA sitting next to me, my parents and my uncle. And I'm like freaking out, like going nuts and nervous, which everyone was like laughing at me because they're like, you're number one, like, of course. But you're like, you never know until you're drafted. Mm-hmm. And so they call my name and I just look at NECA and we're just sort of like, how has this happened? Like, this is crazy. And I was so crazy that when they call my name for about like 12 seconds, I was like, I sort of like blacked out. I was like, NECA literally was like, come on, Janae, get together, go, walk, you know? And I was like, oh, shoot, okay. Like, I'm that crazy emotional type. And then, so the cool thing was that, like, it was literally in an arena packed of my future fans because they had the number one pick.
Yeah.
The fans were there.
I was there for a concert. And I remember the audience being, like, super low-key. Like, not a very energetic. It was like...
Because they're all old.
It would be interesting playing sports there.
Yeah. So the thing about Connecticut is that, like, yes, very much older crowd. I spent my first 5 years of my career there, but UConn women's basketball, like probably arguably the most successful women's basketball program is there. So like all of their fan base like loves women's basketball.
That's true. Yeah.
So like when, as like women's basketball players, we're always fighting for respect because like people are always like trying to shade us for no reason. But in that state, they support women's basketball. So yes, they're a little bit more chill, but they come to the games. You know what I mean?
Well, let's talk about that for a second, though. The WNBA, the NBA, you know, the success of the WNBA, you know, just your feelings on how to move forward with it. Look, Kobe Bryant, for me, I mean, that was one of the crazier days of my life. I was so upset, and I didn't really understand why. I'd met him one time, but he represented something for me.
Mm-hmm.
Gianna as well, I think with him, with Kobe and the work that he was doing, it was pushing. It was going to be pushing girl ball. It was going to be pushing the WNBA. Gianna was going to be something great. And it was almost like Kobe was going to be the one to really bring the WNBA to where it should be.
Absolutely.
Right? I mean, there's so many tragedies, you know, but that's definitely one of them, you know. So where are you girls at with the WNBA currently, and how do we even make it even more hype? How do we make it even as bigger than it can?
First of all, by you even like acknowledging us is awesome. And Kate, like for you sharing, you know, like your point of view on sports on your platform, that like changes this narrative of what people think girls should be, you know, like as athletes, as confident women, like that's just what we're all about in the WNBA. And I think, as you mentioned, when it came to Kobe, I was in LA. I was downtown. It was the Grammys day in which the news happened, in which he passed, and I heard about it. And I, you know, I work for ESPN. So next thing you know, like, I'm the only one in LA Live watching.
I told you.
Yeah,
I was in Houston. I was taking a piano class at Rice. So I was about to go practice the piano, and my friend.
Nerd.
My friend texted me and was like, is this real? Ask your sister, because she works for ESPN. So I called Chanae and she was like, I don't know. And she was like, my phone's blowing up, and she had to like hang up. And I was like, oh my gosh.
Yeah, it was crazy. And so being downtown in LA Live, and like she called me, my NECA called me, and I was like, let me just go into our studios, which is right there, to confirm. And so I looked in the studios and like the headline was there. And it was just like, that was Grammys day. So like when I started walking, I was going to walk to Whole Foods, and like the Grammys were on. So you see people walking in tuxes downtown and like beautiful dresses. And then next thing you know, over the course of an hour, as people discover the news, I started seeing people like in jerseys. Mm-hmm. I saw someone bring a bouquet, like within an hour of the news, like a mural already being put up. And like, a lot of people felt, like you said, Kobe was bigger than sports. Like his mentality, his Mamba mentality is something that we all, like what your craft of acting and entertainment for us in basketball, like we all sort of resonated with us. He was that first real, like, real ally that we needed in the women's basketball community. I always tell people that, like, we don't need these guys to co-sign us, because if they really know, they know that we are the best women's basketball league in the world. Only 144 women get to play in the WNBA. So, like, yes, we're a league full of badass women. Like, every time, I always tell people, like, you look at the WNBA, and it's like that song, like, I'm every woman. You know what I mean? Like, you can find every kind of woman in the WNBA. And, like, we're always, you know, on the forefront of social activism and standing up for causes that we're passionate about. Kobe saw that, and he understood it, and he championed it. And it's really tough because, like, not only losing Kobe, but also Gigi, like, she was the one that he said, look, we're talking about sons. Like, I don't need a son. This is a girl dad. She is the one that's going to rock my name on the back and really change the game for us. So it really hurt us because we had seen her at our WNBA games. We saw him like that season of this past season, the U.S. women's national team came and played in L.A. He obviously brings his daughters to every major women's event because he's like trying to put them and show them, you know, greatness. And he's been a great mentor for all of us in that. And so our Sparks team was there. He had a suite. We're all watching and supporting the U.S. Women's National Team. He invites us to the suite. And so we go in there thinking like, oh, shoot, we get this cool photo op with Kobe, right? And then we end up staying there for 45 minutes. Our coach now this past season, Derek Fisher, Laker legend, right? We're trying to figure out. That's your dude.
I love D-Fish.
Right? Meeting Kobe then, like, it just showed us that as passionate as he was about basketball is how he was about his love for his daughters. And that translated to us as women. Like, he was here to help us because he saw us sort of as like daughters of the game and that type of stuff. So yeah, we like, it just, oh yeah. And there was like a, and he's been that person forever. I'll never forget, like, when I was at Stanford my freshman year, we played at Staples for the Pac-12 tournament. And Staples is obviously the Lakers locker room. I did the corny thing of saying, like, yo, if we win, I'm going to write a note to Kobe. And so we won, and we're leaving the locker room. They're like, Chanel, you're going to leave your note. So I ripped a piece of paper and wrote a note. Dear Kobe, thank you for letting us use your locker room. Like, probably the corniest thing to ever write. you're killing it this season. We're rooting for you. Sincerely, Chanel and Stanford Women's Basketball. These, like, everyone talks about his attention to detail. This happened in 2011. And a few days later, we're at practice at Stanford, and our coach calls, like, says my name, like, at the end of the huddle before we leave, Chanel. And I was like, oh, shoot, what'd I do? Because I was that type of person that, like, didn't do something that caused us to run occasionally. And I was like, oh, shoot, what'd I do? She's like, Chanel, did you leave a note for Kobe in the locker room at Staples? I was like, our whole team just starts jumping up and down because they knew I did.
Yeah.
He got that scrap of paper from his locker and then followed up, reached out to a trainer he was working with the Lakers to contact us at Stanford to tell us that he was proud of us for winning the tournament. Good luck. Strive for greatness in everything that you do. So, like, he was doing those types of things for female athletes, for women, period, like, in the sport that understood what he represented, you know, throughout his life. So that's why we love Kobe.
Oof, I guess makes me want to cry.
I know, makes me want to cry.
I know. Fuck, man. Well, where do you think the WNBA is right now? You mean, I mean, where do we need to go? Like, how does it keep growing?
Ooh, well, we're trending in the right direction. Honestly, okay. Like, if you look at our marketing dollars spent, like, with jersey sales, if you look at our streaming numbers, there's a lot of fake news out there when it comes to the WNBA. Like, it's so socially acceptable for, no offense, kids that probably are, like, teenagers that think it's, like, cool when they see a WNBA, they'll be like, kitchen, or y'all are trash. Like, they just put that automatically, not understanding that they're judging a game upon which they don't even know. And on top of it,
that happen a lot? That happens a lot.
That happens with everything. So terrible.
Yes. I think we're at this point in society, which is really great, like, where we don't just, like, let those things ride and slide. Like, we actually call them out. So now I think people are starting to see the WNBA for what it is, like, a league full of amazing women, women that are leaders, women that are amazing, like, savages on the court. And so now we're also putting ourselves out there, like, as individuals, like me, I'm also a broadcaster. She's going to medical school. We have so many women doing cool different things. Like, there are women that are now coaches in the NBA right now. Like, one of my teammates is a coach for the Washington Wizards as well.
It's so awesome.
You know, we can't wait on the men to help us get validation. Mm-hmm. You didn't earn anything. You know what I mean? From a man, you earned it from yourself.
Oh, yeah.
You know, on the merit of your own skill,
right?
Yeah,
it was
right?
The men who fueled me to earn it.
There we go.
It was the lack of that helped me fuel.
Thank you. Exactly. Yeah. But even, like, if you think about your mom just, like, paving the way and setting an example for you, another woman that sort of could say, hey, this is what you need to know and what you don't, you know, like, that to me is so big when it comes to women's sports in general. We're realizing that in this time, all right, maybe people will continue to compare us to the men. Maybe people will still think that we're less than the men. Well, who cares? I've got U.S. women's soccer that's out here winning World Cups. I've got U.S. women's hockey that's out here fighting for one league. In the WNBA, we just negotiated a new collective bargaining agreement where we accomplished, like, paid maternity leave for women and, you know, better compensation and salary. And then, like, even more general, like, it's not just in sports where all of us are coming together and helping each other. You remember in 2016 with the Women's March? Like, obviously that was a huge moment for women. We're like, hold up, we roll deep. Like, we roll this deep. Mm-hmm. They're gonna have to hear us. You know what I mean? So, like, I think coming together as women, women supporting women, women creating opportunities for other women, like, mm-hmm. that to me can change the game.
Now, what for you, when did you just got drafted, right?
Yeah, like 2 months ago.
In quarantine.
Yeah, in quarantine. We had a virtual draft. I actually put it on my YouTube channel. It was really cool.
Yeah. And tell us how that went down. I mean,
yeah,
you guys were all together.
Yeah, I wasn't like my sisters to where I was going to be a number one draft pick. Like, I've had a successful college career. And so they were just like, it's a virtual draft, you know, record what you're wearing. You know, they tried to tell us, but I wasn't number one draft pick like them. I didn't know if I was going to get drafted. It was like up in the air. You know, I went to Rice University. It's a great number 15 academically, and like basketball wise, we did really well. I did well, but it's not like a UConn, Stanford, you know? So I was just, they're like, hey, you're going to get drafted. And I just didn't know. So that's why this whole year I was preparing for med school. I was doing med school interviews while playing basketball. But yeah, so we just all went to one house and put on ESPN, and we truly did not know when I was going to get picked. Like every single, they're like, and the number 10 pick, we're just like, because we did not know whatsoever. So it was like, it was probably a true draft.
It was the first real true draft our family had.
Yeah, because the rest of them, they both knew they were number one. So then they called my name at the 26th pick. And it was funny because I was drafted to the New York Liberty. So we were like jumping and cheering and all that stuff. It was really cool. I was like, oh, I'm gonna be in New York. And then first trade of the draft, they're like, word is Erica Ogunbowale was traded to the Minnesota Lynx. And I was like, whoa. Think about it. I was recording this for my YouTube channel too. So like, I had it up and like, I had to forewarn my subscribers, like, don't read my face. Like, I was just in shock, I promise. But I was excited. I was just in shock.
The context behind it is that the Minnesota Lynx are like the rivals of the Sparks.
Yeah, it's literally the only rival team of the Sparks, the only one.
So two of us are on the Sparks and now she's traded to our rival.
Yeah. Oh my God.
Wow.
Yeah, so that was crazy. I was like the first trade of the draft. But honestly though, I was like excited because if you're traded, that means they really want you and they just had to figure out a way to get you. So like, I was like, okay, you know, that's awesome to know that a team really wanted me like
that.
Wait,
so you guys are going to be playing against each other as like rivals?
It's possible, yes.
Yes.
Wow.
Wow. Fun. Oh,
that sounds
God.
Fun. I know. I was like, I'm trying to put myself in that position. Like, if that was us, Oliver, if I, you know.
How would that look?
It would be fun.
Oh,
fun probably, and heated.
I just post you up.
That's what they're probably going to do to me.
That's what she'll do to you, of course,
yeah,
right?
I mean.
So for 5 years, I played against NECA. So I was with the Connecticut Sun before I got traded to the Sparks to play with her.
Right.
Let me tell you. That first game, first of all, the entire Africa was there because that was the first time. That was the first time we played against each other. And when we played, so the jump ball happened. And of course, they're like, sisters on the jump ball.
Yeah, they made them both
wow.
do it.
Nekka's got more bunnies than me, so she got it, which was cool.
Yeah.
But you know me, the corny one, like, we have to match up against each other.
She's running back. She's
I'm
like,
running
this
back.
Is going to be fun.
I was like, telling Nekka, I was like, yeah, this is going to be fun. She didn't even hear me. They went straight to her on the block. She hit me with, like, a fadeaway bucket. And I was like, ooh, I better come ready. Because Nekka was ready to roast. Hey, I held my own, though. I held my own.
Yeah.
But I knew that first possession, she was coming for me.
How many times have you guys gone up against each other?
It really sucks for me because, like, my team at the time was bad. Like,
I think we
won, like, maybe 9 games my first year or so. Because typically, if you have the number one draft pick, that means you're probably the worst
Yeah,
team.
No, I get it, yeah.
And so we started from the bottom, now we're here, right? The first few years, I got my butt whooped by NECA, like, the first few years. And then the last few years, our team started to get better because we got more draft picks. We got, you know, and then we beat them a couple times. But then eventually my sister. So a lot of people don't know when you play in the WNBA, you play from May to October. Typically October to May, WNBA players go and play overseas. So I played in Italy. I played in China. NECA's played in Poland, China, and Russia for a couple years.
Wow.
So like ever since my sister graduated Stanford, I've barely seen her. She's been to the WNBA or in China or one of those countries. And so I felt like it was important for our family. Like we were missing each other. So after 5 years, I was very lucky that the Connecticut Sun traded me to LA. So now we can hang out at least during the summertime.
Well, now, but when you were playing each other, would you have to hold your, like, love for each other? Or were you like, fuck it, like, ah!
So
like, I'm trying to remember what happened exactly, but, like, I remember I was on the free throw line, and they were beating us bad, and you know, like, people are nicer when they're beating you, so, like, yeah. I was standing next to NECA, and NECA's like, your shoe's untied. I was like, I know my shoe's untied. Like,
right. He was salty.
I got it. Like, I was salty, but she was like,
that,
nice.
Like, makes me more, that, like, makes me more frustrated when people are nice when they know that you're losing. You're like, don't do that.
Yeah, I was like, don't do that. I
just don't.
Leave me
alone. We used to just cheer when y'all would score because we didn't want to cheer for either team.
Yeah.
So, Shanae, you're a forward, right?
Yes, both of us are forwards, yeah.
Okay. You're five nine point guard.
I'm like a point guard.
Shooting guard, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, you guys, this is just incredible. I hope that opportunity actually happens. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I would love it because we've got two on one right here.
I know. Mm-hmm. With the baby. I feel like you might be a little easy on her because she's your baby sister.
Oh, you don't be. I'd be like, shoot it.
Yeah. I'm just there. I'm just here for a good ride.
Well, you could probably cross her over and break her ankles.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you're quick. I'm sure you're pretty quick, right? Yeah.
You know, an athlete's life playing at a high level is short. It's not usually a long-lived experience. So what do you feel like you're taking from this right now? And where do you want to go with it when that part of your career is over?
Yeah, I think you like nailed it because a lot of athletes don't even realize that. We get in this mind frame of like, ball is life. Like, but at some point you're going to like have to hang your shoes up and it's going to be done. And it comes quicker than you even know. I think considering that we sort of fell into basketball and fell in love with it, we've already sort of like been destined probably for other things. Like, I didn't know that I would go into broadcasting and, you know, report on the NBA. Honestly, it happened to me when I got injured. So I learned this, Kate, when I was injured twice. I've had right knee microfracture surgery and left Achilles surgery. Both injuries take you out for like a year and a half. Mm-hmm. So when she won her state championship, I was at home on crutches. Like, she won and I was like crutching, like, yeah, let's go. So I learned that lesson then, that like, oh, sports can go at any time. And so I think I started saying yes to a lot of opportunities, and she understands this because like this platform that sports gives us is really tremendous. That's why you see a lot of athletes like jumping on causes and, you know, using their platforms to create like meaningful change. So for me, I never thought like through those injury times and me saying yes, I'm like, yeah, I'll go on this network and yeah, I'll go and talk to these people. It manifested into like, oh, would you work this women's basketball game? Oh, would you host Sports Center Africa? Oh, would you be an NBA analyst? Like, these things just naturally led one from like one thing to the other. And so I guess for me, it's all about like uplifting women in particular, especially Black women, just because I know it's like doubly hard to try to like, you know, make it. And then, you know, keep the positivity and the joy and like not box ourselves in and let, like, if you saw me, people probably think, oh, like, what does she do? Like, they don't necessarily know. They see my name, you know, just trying to bring all that positivity that sports has brought us. Right. But I know she has like her own point of view because like medical school is a whole nother beast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was coughing, just something was in my throat. It wasn't like I was trying to talk. Sorry, it was like awkward timing. But yeah, I think ultimately I didn't even know sports were going to go past this year because I didn't know I was going to get drafted. So yeah, I already planned on going to med school, becoming a physician. And I think I just liked sciences. So that's kind of how the pre-med stuff happened. Nobody in my family's done anything medically related. Like, whenever I was doing med school interviews, they thought I got accepted to the school. And like, so they were cheering and stuff. But I was like, nah, it's an interview. Or like, they didn't, like, when I pressed submit, they like were cheering. You know, okay, they didn't get any of it.
She was like so low key with her medical school. She's like, oh, I think I'm just gonna try to apply to one. I was like, no, apply to them all.
Yeah.
And the next thing you know, she got into 9 out of 10 of her top medical schools.
Damn.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Yeah. So I knew that was gonna be what I wanted to do after basketball. I like sciences. I like just like how multidimensional medicine is. Like, I plan on, you know, trying to be like someone in health admin, you know, like working with a lot of people. So, you know, I love Dr. Pimple Popper. That's like my ideal job. I want to be a dermatologist on TV. Like, that sounds amazing. you know? So I just, and I know she works with so many different other like professions, like entrepreneurs, business people. So that sounds so cool to me. So other than basketball, it was something that I learned throughout school that I liked. So it's nice to know that basketball is going to continue, but I kind of know what I want to do afterwards.
And this is why I'm really excited.
How does that work though? So how will that work for you?
Yeah, I think with the coronavirus and just everything going on, it's very possible that I'm able to do both this year. Because school is remote, most likely. But if not, I was so scared whenever I told all the med schools that accepted me. I was so nervous. Like, that was the reason on the draft day I wasn't even that happy, because I was thinking they were going to take away my acceptances. But every single med school I called was like, this is amazing. Like, enjoy what you're doing. Like, we're going to work with you. So I don't really know how it's going to work, but all of them have been so accommodating. And the one school I chose, like, is super accommodating too. So, to be determined how it's going to work out, but it'll work out.
So I want to talk about just race and growing up and what that was like for you girls. Whether it was something that was talked about, you know, in your family with your mom and your dad, and how that just played a part in your childhood and your upbringing and where you're at right now with all of it.
So we are here, you know, like, as we mentioned, born and raised in Houston, Texas. And I think right now where the world is, like, our backyard, our people are hurting, right? Mm-hmm. Even though we're Nigerian American, when we step outside, we're Black, you know, and we're Black American. And so we have, I guess you can say, that like intersectionality of like juggling multi identities. And so, like, you think about what has happened in our backyard. George Floyd was from Houston, Texas. He went to Yates High School, one of the best basketball programs and sports programs that we always heard of growing up. During quarantine, our dad had always been saying, can we drive to Galveston? It's like an hour drive out of Houston. Let's drive to Galveston. And so, ironically,
Galveston has the dirtiest water, nothing compared to Malibu whatsoever. My dad wanting to go, like, that's how you know, like, it's just not pretty.
He just likes to go on road trips, but like, yeah, don't go there thinking it's Malibu waters, because it's definitely not. But like, we, you know, it was ironic that we went the day after Juneteenth to Galveston, and we were just thinking about like how we are feeling and how it feels different, especially being in Houston. There's a woman by the name of Sandra Bland that really affected our community as well when it comes to social injustice. So, like, as Black women in particular, you know, I think a lot of times women, as you know, like, Kate, you know, tend to get neglected in the narrative a lot. Like, whether it's with salary, whether it is with opportunity, whether it is with raising their voices and actually being heard, right? So I think the good thing that I've learned actually through sports is that our collective voice matters, which is why I wanted to say, like, I'm so glad to be on here with you, because as like a huge woman, not just in the industry, but just literally in the world, to share your platform with us to tell our truth, our stories, our experiences, and other women and other siblings, it literally, as you know, on this podcast, it takes a village. And so as women, the way we see the world moving when it comes to race, I think we're starting to realize that we are more alike than we are different. Like, we all have struggles. Some people's struggles are way, way more severe, you know, because, you know, there's issues of privilege and there's issues of just, you know, us being able to live and move and breathe comfortably in this world. So I guess that's sort of where I sit.
And I think me personally, because I've been in Houston for like pretty much 21 years, like my whole life. I've been in Houston because I went to Rice University, which is literally in the heart of Houston as well. So I have a more so academic side as well, because Rice is a research institution and they're a super diverse institution, but I've always been a Black student in Houston, a Black student in high school. So I've been able to connect with a lot of academics at Rice, because I think when all of this happened, everyone wanted to do something, you know, sign every petition you could, like, they just wanted to do something. And it's kind of hard to feel like you're doing something, you know, especially at my age. So I've been really involved in trying to get more involved, because people don't realize, but there's so many people who do this for a living, you know, trying to amplify voices about voting, about like health disparities, just different things like that. They do that for a living. So it's been nice being able to connect with the community at Rice and Houston in general to like join initiatives that they're already doing. And it's kind of cool knowing that I've been in Houston my whole life and I'm able to, you know, just commit and give back a little, you know. And it's a surreal experience.
Did your parents ever touch upon it? Was when you guys were kids, you know, and had that have a talk with you or anything like that?
I think these are all conversations that like children of Black families have, like, mm-hmm. and you don't even realize that this is just what we have come to accept, not knowing that like for the world, it's just not fair that we have to accept these things. So yeah, like when we go out, you know, it's simple as saying, hey, don't be out when the sun goes down, or, you know, don't wear a hoodie, or like when you see people, like make sure your hands are free, or when you're driving, yeah. you know, like I'm on the phone. I lived in Connecticut for 5 years and I would drive to ESPN at like 3 or 4 in the morning and then like at 1 a.m. at night. And I'm on the phone with my mom the whole time I'm driving just in case something happens. She's already ready to hear. Our dad just sort of telling us that, hey, like you need to be prepared at all times, even though we didn't feel or understand necessarily the weight of it. This is just how life has always been for us.
Right. It's almost like in your mind, it was just the norm.
Which I get why they made it the norm for us, so that it definitely became habits. And it was just something that we did without thinking. But at the same time, they didn't explain as much like why they were doing it. They're just like, you need to know these things. Like mm-hmm. even I was jogging today with no headphones on, and every time I passed someone, I made sure I turned my music down. Like, why did I do that? But it's because my parents told me, you know, like, don't cause a scene, don't be loud, yeah. things like that. And it's just something that's in our nature. And I get now, learning about the world, why they did that.
Yeah, but I also, like, you know, as hard as things have been, like, even just thinking about things we didn't let, like, sit heavy in our soul. Like, I remember we talk about being born and raised, born at Tomball Hospital in Texas. Tomball High School, not to put them on blast, but like,
oh, Lord.
I was in a high school in Texas. I remember I played a volleyball game and I'm the only, you know, Black girl on the team. I'm like 6'2".
Long, dangly.
Super long, dangly, super powerful. I was a boss at volleyball at the time, right? We went to state. I remember the crowd was full, I would say 99%, you know, white kids, my team, primarily white kids. We all got along, but like when I was going to the quote unquote enemy territory of playing against another school, I was called racial epithets. I was called things like animal and HGH, steroids, monkey, while I was playing in a quiet gym. And I remember my teammates just looked and they just kept looking at me. Like no one even talked about it, but they were trying to see how I'd react, mm-hmm. if I cared, if I heard. And it's like in those moments you forget like how exposed and naked you feel. And like I just remember not trying to like well up and cry and show that I felt something, right? Mm. I made it through. We won the game. Crushed it, right?
Mm-hmm. Left. Wait, what position did you play?
I was middle blocker.
Okay.
Yeah, I was middle blocker. So I remember that, like, it was so hard to get through those moments. I left. And I left knowing that that was just how it was. Like, this is something that can't happen when you are the only Black person in a setting in the South. And I never held that against it. I just felt like we're so ignorant at times to our own history. But mm-hmm. now the beautiful thing is, if you're being ignorant now, you're choosing to be ignorant. We literally right. are living in the midst of two pandemics, you know, COVID, Corona, and racism. Two yeah. pandemics that disproportionately affect people of color, especially, you know, Black people, Black women as well. So now it's like, if you're choosing to ignore the realities of the world we live in right now, then I don't, you know,
yeah.
that's not the energy we need. Mm-hmm. We're all united in a different way. Like this young generation, I always make fun of them. Like
Gen Z,
you know, like the TikTokers. I saw the funniest tweet where they're like, we were worried about y'all when you were eating Tide Pods, but y'all are out here, you know, talking that talk and walking that walk. I think we have a generation where it's not just activism. Like we go on social media and like post these things. Yeah. It's now like action. How do we, as you mentioned, carry that over as one? Like right now, I think a lot of people are shook. They're like, whoa, I've grown up in this lane, but I see this one experience and we all know that is wrong. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. How do we come together and move forward?
I believe in Gen Z.
Same here.
This collective consciousness though is so powerful, because I think like what y'all are saying, educating and learning more, everyone's realizing in this age of information, like, I have to learn more or I'm being completely ignorant. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I'm also learning more too, which is great. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm learning what I can, what I shouldn't accept, like what in the past I shouldn't have accepted from people, or mm-hmm. what I can still, you know, do better and try to educate people. So it's like collectively everybody is learning. And I think it's just such a transformative time.
You are engaging in your future and your kids' future differently than you have been as a girl who's been focused on basketball in med school.
Yeah. Because people think, I need to create this big organization, blah, blah. You don't need to do any of that. Like, people already have it done. Please just go find it and learn about it and amplify those voices. And honestly, I think that's what people are starting to do. I think at first it was complacency because everyone was like, what can I do? And then, like you said, you do nothing.
And I know it's not even just complacency. People are worried to mess up.
Yeah.
Like, as Black people, I know, like, it's we're going through an experience and we're like, y'all are just starting to realize what we've been going through, right?
Sure.
And then people are trying to speak up. And I know it's been probably pressure on you, especially Kate. Like, what are you going to say? How do I say it the right way?
Yeah.
And so I just tell people, like, trying is important. And
it's seen. It's not. It's noticed.
It's noticed. Like, yes, there are going to be major mistakes. There are going to be errors along the way. But even if, like, just sharing the platforms with us is what is huge, you know?
Right. Kate, guess what I did this morning?
Shrooms.
I did shrooms.
Were they like adaptogen shrooms?
I woke up at like 8. I was in the need for something, and I was craving shrooms. Mushroom coffee from Four Sigmatic. Those kinds of shroom. My favorite coffee of all time. Even before we started doing these ads, that was the jam.
Me too. So. We both, and especially actually here, because we've been in Colorado and the coffee situation is kind of weird. The coffee machine's from like 1983. Everything our parents have is from like the 80s. But this coffee machine is kind of a pain in the ass. So we actually really go to our Four Sigmatic coffees. And and so it's ground mushroom coffee with lion's mane instead of regular coffee. And it just helps you focus.
And chaga.
It's all about the mushrooms. Chaga is considered the king of mushrooms. It's all about immune support. So mushroom coffee is also easy on your gut, so it doesn't leave you with any jittery feeling or a crash, you know?
That's the best part of it.
They're organic, they're vegan, they're gluten-free. Every single batch is tested in a third-party lab to ensure purity and safety. So you know you're getting highest quality coffee and shrooms possible. Best of all, Four Sigmatic stands behind their product unconditionally with 100% money-back guarantee. Love every sip or get your money back.
So we've worked out an exclusive offer with Four Sigmatic on their best-selling Lion's Mane coffee. This is just for Sibling Revelry listeners. Receive up to 40% off on their best-selling Lion's Mane coffee bundles. To claim this deal, you must go to foursigmatic.com/sibling. This offer is only for Sibling Revelry listeners and is not available on their regular website. It's exclusive, man. So go to foursigmatic.com/sibling and fuel your productivity and creativity with some delicious mushroom coffee. Full discount applied at checkout.
You guys are awesome.
Yeah, and I want to end this. Well, let's end this ad with the slogan, take a trip to Four Sigmatic.
So I have a great story about this new ad that we're doing. It was brought to my attention by your wife for me because we were in Colorado. And one day, I'm one of those people, I refuse to use... Only if I'm literally going to the Academy Awards or like the Golden Globes will I put on a real deodorant, you know, like a real kind of antiperspirant, terrible deodorant. That's the only time I'll ever use something like that. Every other time I won't wear deodorant and it's not so great. And sometimes, you know, I will just wear all my natural deodorant and it's wonderful. Now, it's hard to find a good natural deodorant. Your wife, I went to one day in Aspen. I forgot my deodorant. I was like, babe, do you have any deodorant I can use? And she's like, yeah, this is the best. She gave me a Native deodorant. I remember I used it and I was like, what is this? because this one actually works. It's a hard thing to say with natural deodorant because one smell good, one that, but this one actually is a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful natural deodorant.
Yeah. See, can I, because I'm the opposite of you, real quick. I've tried the natural deodorants, like rock under my armpit or whatever. There's all these weird shit, like put a rock salt under your armpit or, you know, some sort of a strange natural deodorant that never, never, ever, ever works. So I always use the bad shit, but then, but this is the good shit.
Also, I do want to talk about switching to the aluminum-free deodorant because it doesn't mean that you have to sacrifice on odor protection, right? And I think that's one of the hard things. And I want people to understand aluminum, it forms a plug in your sweat glands to keep you from sweating. And that's why you never use ingredients like aluminum, parabens, sulfates, or talc. Because when that absorbs into your system, it is incredibly and can be over time dangerous for you. So that's why we support brands like this.
10 cents over 10 cents, not 10 cents. That's not how much it costs. It's 10 like sniffy cents. Rotating seasons. Vanilla is the most popular one. That's the one my wife loves. Lavender, rose, cucumber, and mint, citrus, and herbal.
The citrus and herbal is yummy, yummy, or I do it.
And it's risk-free. It's risk-free. Every product comes with free shipping within the U.S., plus the free 30-day returns and exchanges. So see why so many people love Native and check out the over 14,000 five-star reviews. Do what everyone is doing. Make the switch to Native today by going to nativedeo.com/sibling or use promo code sibling at checkout and get 20% off your first order. That's nativedeo.com/sibling or use promo code sibling at checkout for 20% off your first order. All right, let's do this.
Okay, one word to describe each other.
Oh, I was going to say baby.
Crazy.
Great. Perfect. Who's more competitive?
Me.
Yeah.
Really?
Okay.
Yeah.
Better grades.
Me.
Okay, so Erica right now is more competitive.
I more... finesse. You know?
She
you
does.
Know,
she's.
I know how to finesse.
Who has better shoes?
Chanae.
She has more money than me. That's only, just give me a couple years.
Who wins in a game of horse?
Erica.
Sure, really? She's the guard. She's the guard.
Unless we're shooting layups and she's dunking, then I'm
right.
Winning.
No, you can't do that. That's not fair.
Oh my gosh. Who's more of a homebody?
Chanae.
Netflix and chill, even if it's by myself.
Yeah.
Me too. Mm-hmm. I love it.
Who's funnier?
Erica.
She's not funny. She's like got that sarcastic humor that almost like hurts your feelings, but she's laughing so you don't feel threatened.
Yes, it's, that's like me too. I love that kind of humor.
It's called dry humor.
Yes, yeah. Dry humor.
Who's better at karaoke?
Chanae, probably, because like I'm more...
We're both tone deaf.
Yeah, we really are bad.
Who's more of the rule follower?
Chanae.
Yeah, me.
Yeah.
Who's a better multitasker?
Erica. Oh, terrible.
She's horrible. Terrible. I can't do anything.
You're one thing at a time.
One thing, yes.
Who takes longer to get ready?
Chanae.
Yeah, probably me.
What about your first celebrity crush?
Oh,
I know hers easily. We just talked about this.
Go ahead and talk about it.
Hers is Chris Brown.
Oh.
Let me see if you can run it. Yeah.
Now it's like,
You're like, it was, but this was before.
Like a long time ago.
Growing up, you know.
He's still awesome, though, music-wise.
Musically.
Yeah.
Talented.
She doesn't know mine. I was too
What's
young.
Yours?
We're too far apart in age.
Who was yours?
What was yours?
Nick Jonas.
Oh, my God.
A very good first crush.
I've been to like four Jonas Brothers concerts.
Did you guys have posters when you were kids?
Yeah.
Jonas Brothers.
What were some of your posters? Like memorable posters?
Chris Brown, Little Romeo,
Oh my God, little Romeo.
I still like, that's a crush right there. I met him a year or so ago and I was like, oh, you're kind of tall. He's like 6 feet tall.
You got excited.
You know, for me, I got little amps because I'm tall. I was like, oh, snap.
I have
Blake Griffin was on my wall.
I have Blake Griffin posters. We kind of all love Blake Griffin. And then it's kind of weird now because she's like,
because I'm like an analyst and I'm like,
I didn't have any posters. Yeah, I know.
Hey, Blake.
You didn't have,
No, I had a poster of Lionel Messi. I don't know why.
Lionel Messi. Soccer.
Oh, yeah. Of
course. I think I had a Michael Jordan one because Oliver's girlfriend was in love with Michael Jordan, which then I was in love with Michael Jordan.
Oh, really?
She kind of brought the love of Michael Jordan into our house.
Into your home.
I'm still in love with Michael Jordan.
Yes, same.
Even watching him as an older man on Last Dance, I was like, oh God, you're so sweet.
I love them on that.
Who would survive? Who would most likely survive a month in the wilderness?
Ooh, that's a good question.
We both would probably. Yeah.
Would?
Yeah, we both. Well, actually, we either really wouldn't or we really would.
Yeah.
There's no.
Who would you lean on for survival? You know, or is it would it be like a team effort?
It'd be a team effort. It'd be a team effort because we both have our weaknesses.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Who is more adventurous?
Probably.
We have our moods. I don't know.
It
depends on who wakes up more adventurous.
It depends. Probably me, just because, like,
it's because her job and her lifestyle is a bit more adventurous than mine right now.
Yeah, probably.
So that's probably, yeah.
Yeah.
Is there anyone that you'd love to meet? You know what I mean? Like a celebrity or an athlete or someone who you like, man, I wish I could meet him or her.
Say it.
Say it.
I'm thinking. I mean, of course, Barack Obama.
Yeah. I'm trying to think specific.
Or Michelle Obama, one of the other.
Yeah. I mean, that's like an automatic. That's a go-to.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think. Who... I would say I did freak out when I saw Viola Davis in the airport at LAX. Oh, she's.
I probably want to meet Bad Bunny,
The musician.
He's a musician.
So the last question is a two-part question, and the question is what is it about the other one that is something that you wish you could emulate, that you, a quality that they have, that you love, that you wish it was something that you had as well. And then the other part of that question is something you'd want to alleviate from your sibling that you think would be in the best interest of everything that is good about them.
Okay.
Right.
Emulate. I'll start.
Okay.
I don't know how she's been able to like focus at such a high level, like playing basketball, but like also going to class and doing the hardest classes. For me, it's like I put a ball in a basket currently and I talk about people that put balls in baskets, right? Like it's so simple and natural. But for her, like to even choose medical school, focus, and not just like learning is so subjective. And to be able to tackle all of those things, I wish I could have that like zero in focus and drive. Being the youngest out of us four, to like have three older sisters and not feel like threatened and to not feel like she doesn't belong, but instead like I just am I'm a professional basketball player and talk about basketball. She's like going to be a doctor and like hopefully save lives. So she's been driven and motivated. So I would like to take some of that focus because you heard I can't multitask. So.
I would probably say for Chinee, emulate some of her like kind of like universal empathy and like just compassion for everybody. Like people always ask from her and she'll always give people 100% back. Like I think at times I can find myself, you know, people asking. I'm like, hey, you know, hold up. I need a minute. Like Chinee, it's never that. She's always willing to help and just like be there for everybody, regardless of how busy she is. She'll maybe be like, hey, I need to get back to you. But she's just always empathetic to everyone's situation. So I think that'd be something I would say.
Alleviate
is like such a nice word for this question.
Emulate, alleviate. It's perfect. I would say alleviate, like growing up, we started playing basketball at the age of 10 and I went into high school and then went into college and then got into the pros. And I'm just now like at the age of, you know, 26, 27, now I'm 28, like tapping into living. right? Like choosing to do things on my own for myself. So if it's alleviate, I would hope that she can also like experience life and not just let it happen and then look back and be like, whoa, like I did a lot of great stuff, but like, did you do it? Were you present? Were you in the moment? So I'm just hoping that she, if I can alleviate anything, it's like the pressure that she probably feels being the youngest and choosing a really difficult path. And just to enjoy life, because your girl's out here, like, you know, 28, got Nigerian African parents, like, where's your husband? Like, what are you doing? And I was like, I was like, mom, but you saw I was in school and I was like, what? I'm like behind the curve on this ish.
And went from no boyfriends to why aren't you married like that?
Bam. So like, I want her to have fun and to be young and to tap into life in a way that I wasn't really, I chose not to.
I can't think of anything that heartfelt, but I would probably say alleviate just injuries. You know, I hope she's done with injuries.
Thank you.
Everyone in our family has been blessed. Yeah, have been blessed kind of with not experiencing like too many severe injuries. Like, yes, there's been like concussions and like I think NECA's been like sick before. But like she's had legit Achilles injuries, knee injuries that have taken her out for like a long time. So, you know, that's probably something that I'd want to alleviate for the rest of her professional career. Hopefully.
Thanks. Appreciate that, my dog.
No more
injuries. That's a good one.
Yeah.
Knocking on wood.
Yeah. You guys, this was so fun.
Oh, this has been great.
I love every second of this.
This has been great.
Thank you. Sibling Revelry is executive produced by Kate Hudson, Oliver Hudson, and Sim Sarna.
Supervising producer is Allison Bresnik.
Editor is Josh Windisch.
Music by Mark Hudson, a.k.a. Uncle Mark.